Begin the current daf, Masech the Baba Basra, daf Kuf Yad Ches. Begin the second line down for the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf, where the Gemara had said a mnemonic to recall all the different questions Rav Papa asked in Abaya regarding the topic of our previous daf, regarding the halacha of our Mishnah, that the Benoit Slavcha had inherited three different portions in Eretz Yisrael. And on that, the Gemara said that's contingent upon the Machlekes if Eretz Yisrael is divided amongst those who left Egypt, Liyetz Mitzrayim, as it's called, or Labayi Eretz Yisrael, of those who, when they entered into Eretz Yisrael. So that Republic continues asking questions regarding these two different opinions. He says, it's very well understood, according to the opinion that says that Eretz Yisrael was divided amongst those who left Egypt, even though they never got there. Their children who ended up going there just inherited their father's portions that was divided amongst them when they left Egypt. So then we could understand the historical episode in the Torah that the daughters of Tzlavchid were complaining and screaming that Lomi Garashem Avinu Matech Meshpachta, as the Torah says, why should our father lose out from his family that to merit a portion of Eretz Yisrael, as the pasuk says, Ki Ein Loi Ben, because he doesn't have a son, meaning, because had he had a son, the son would have taken our father's portion who were from those who left Egypt. And now because he doesn't have a son, why should he lose his portion? And that makes sense, because his father really had, Tzlavchid really had a portion because he left Egypt. It's just that now there's no son to carry that on. So they were saying, let us do that. But according to the one who says that Eretz Yisrael wasn't divided amongst those who left Egypt. It was only divided amongst those who entered into Eretz Yisrael. Amay Tzavchan, what are they screaming and complaining about? Halesei, Tzlavchid was not around at the time of the splitting up of Eretz Yisrael, the Lishkol, that he should take a portion, neither him, nor any descendants that are males, to go ahead and merit, because Eretz Yisrael was not divided amongst those who left Egypt, according to this opinion, only according to those who entered into Eretz Yisrael. So even had he had a son, that son would not have taken anything because of his father's portion. And actually that son himself, if he would have been under 20, he himself would not have taken anything, even for his own rights. So what exactly was it that the daughters of Tzlavcha were complaining about? Say, oh, because our father doesn't have a son? What are you talking about? Your father doesn't have a portion to complain about that because there's no son, that he's losing his portion. Didn't have. It's only for those who entered into Eretz Yisrael. That answers the Gemara. It's not difficult. Rather, what they were complaining about was this concept of chazara, which we explained in the previous daf, that even according to the one who says that Eretz Yisrael was divided amongst those who entered into Eretz Yisrael, he still holds, to explain the other pasuk that we mentioned, that there's a concept known as chazara, meaning that they get their own portion, but then that's given back to their fathers, whatever they take. Then, after their fathers, who are already dead, that we said is backwards of what it usually is, that the dead are inheriting the living, they then go ahead and then bequeath it from their fathers back to their children. And this is what they were complaining about. They were saying, why should our father Tzlavchad lose out mitech mishpachtei from his family? What does it mean from his family? Because our father Tzlavchad, you're right, he doesn't get his own portion, but he should have gotten a portion with his brothers, v'litol b'nechsei chefer, to take from the state of our grandfather, his father chefer. Because had Tzlavchid had a son, so then when the sons of Chefer, who are our father's brothers, would be splitting up the inheritance of Eretz Yisrael, then what would have happened was, although whoever comes into Eretz Yisrael takes, but it would be going back to our grandfather, to their father, Chefer, and then he would bequeath it to all his children. Then our father, who is the firstborn, would have taken two portions, either him or his son who takes his place. As we learn elsewhere where it says, v'mein lo, if there's no ben, which with a yud tells us, I know of to look and see that, okay, even if the person's not alive, if he has a son, that son takes his place. Now that's what they were complaining about and saying, but now that he has no son, so why can we not take our father's place to take his inheritance that comes to him, not because he's from Yitz Mitzrayim, you're right, it gets divided by those who enter Eretz Yisrael, but they don't get it directly, they kick it back to their father, who their father is Chefer, who's dead, but then when Chefer goes and redivides it amongst his sons, our father, although he's not alive coming in, would have gotten inheritance from his father, and even though he's not alive, his son would have gotten it. And that is again through the concept of Chazar, that it goes back, and then it goes back to that person's sons or grandsons from those who are entering into Eretz Yisrael. So they were saying, although our father didn't leave a son, but he left daughters, and we know the halacha is, as the Gemara elsewhere darshins, that a bas haben yireshet sema'achin. The daughter of the son inherits with their uncles, which are that person's dead, that the dead person's brothers, because as we said, the daughter of a son takes the place of the son, which as the Gemara actually tells us later on, the Kofi Testament Beis, that actually the Bnei Slavchad were very wise women that were darshanis. They knew to expound, and they knew this halacha, which is that the daughter of the son inherits with his brothers, which the Gemara learns out from the Parsha of Yevamah later on the Kovir Tesama base. So therefore, it's not a difficulty what they were complaining about, because they weren't talking about his portion, but rather his portion that would have gotten to him from what would be kicked back to the father Hefer that he would have gotten from his father, which are these two portions that they were saying, let us get that. A third question from Rav Papa to Abaya, continuing from the first one on the previous daf, says, Bishlema lema'anda amal yetz Mitzrayim. Again, he's going with the assumption, liking the opinion that, according to the one who says that Eretz Yisrael was divided amongst those who left Egypt, that would make sense what the sons from the tribe of Yosef were complaining about, because now at the time when they entered Eretz Yisrael, they had multiplied. They were much more than any of the other tribes. The problem was that they were only taken according to the calculations of how much they were when they left Egypt. And the problem is that since they have so many more people, each one of those people of the tribes of Yosef are taking that much less than the rest of the tribes, because the rest of the tribes don't have that many people, so it's not so bad. But they were taking that much less because it was only being divided how they were 40 years ago. Where the Chassid, like it says the Pasuk in Yeshua, that it says, V'yedaber b'nei Yosef, that the sons of Yosef said, Es Yeshua to Yeshua, Lamer saying, why do you give us one portion, but I'm many people, because Hashem has blessed me so much? So it makes sense what they're complaining about, because they're not getting it how they're coming in now, rather how they were 40 years ago. Elamandam alabaya oretz, but according to the opinion that says that Eretz Yisrael was divided according to those, each person, how they were coming to Eretz Yisrael at that time. So my katzavchi, what were they complaining about? Kulu shakl, everyone was taking equally according to the personhood that they were coming into Eretz Yisrael. So if they had more, then they were getting more. Now, Rashbam actually points out, although the Gemara actually on Kuf Chav Beis and Manav tells us later on that Eretz Yisrael was divided tribe by tribe, and therefore, even if they're splitting up how they are right now, it would still make sense that the tribe of Yosef was complaining because they're only taking an equal 12 of Eretz Yisrael like all the other tribes, even though now their tribe is much bigger than the rest of the tribes. So even though you're dividing how it is now, but each person is going to get less, says Rashbam, since the Gemara actually says later on as a question, they didn't want to use it as an answer. So therefore the difficulty is, what are they complaining about? They're getting how it is being divided right now. And that says the Gemara, no, Mishum Tefalim. Because the tribe of Yosef had orphans that were under the age of 20 when they entered into Eretz Yisrael, and neither did they have a father that entered into Eretz Yisrael, that they should go ahead and have an inheritance when the father dies. Moreover, there were a lot of orphans in the tribe of Yosef that had no one bequeathing them, that had left Egypt, that then bequeathed to them their portion in Eretz Yisrael by what we call the concept of kickback, where although that they're not their child, but it goes back and then comes back to them. To have an official, there were many of those in the tribe of Yosef. That way they would complain, because there were so many, and we have many orphans, and they're not getting any portion. So you're right, it gets divided about the people right now, but the orphans under the age of 20 have nothing, and that's what they were complaining about. What's going to be with all our orphans? We have nothing to give them. Now, Abaya says parenthetically from this that Shema Minah, what we infer from the complaints of the tribe of Yosef and from the daughters of Tzlavchad, is that Lehav Achad, that there was no one from all the tribes, the Loy Shakel, that did not take a portion Eretz Yisrael, whether him or from his father, that didn't take a portion Eretz Yisrael. How do you know this? Because if you would entertain to say that there was an individual that did not take a portion Eretz Yisrael, then the boilei lemitzvach, then they should have complained, as we find by the Bnei Tzlavchad and by the tribe of Yosef. Moreover, the prophet should have written it as it writes that the Bnei Tzlavchad complained that they weren't getting, and the Bnei Yosef, they were complaining regarding their orphans that they weren't getting. Because the explanation is that, because although it is likely that it could have been that someone would not have gotten a portion. Let's take, for example, the opinion that says it was split amongst those who left Egypt, where all those who went out from Egypt under the age of 20 without a father didn't take a portion there to Israel, because neither them nor their father were from those who left Egypt over the age of 20. And as we said, because Tefillin, children under the age of 20, the Eretz Yisrael was not divided amongst them. And that is what Abai is saying. Even so, it's obvious from the fact that the prophet doesn't say about anyone that complained, it didn't happen, that there shouldn't be an orphan that went out from Egypt under the age of 20. And even if he was an orphan under age of 20 that went out, then it must have been that he had one of his relatives who died in the Midbar, who had left Egypt, who then bequeathed his portion to this orphan, similar as we find in the Bnei Slavchad, that they themselves were not fit to take a portion of Eretz Yisrael, as the Sefri says. It says, Ish lefi pekudav, which says a man according to his station, which excludes women, which are similar to children. And even so, they inherited their father's portion. So everyone got a portion, even though it was likely that it could have been that some didn't, but we see that these were the only ones that complained. So to according to the pin that says that Eretz Yisrael was divided amongst those who entered into Eretz Yisrael, so anyone that entered into Eretz Yisrael under the age of 20 would not have taken a portion. Rather, the only way it would have been possible is through this concept of Chazara, which is, for example, if let's say those who bequeathed to him were from those who left Egypt, but if not, then they wouldn't take a portion. And even so, that's what Abai is saying, that there was not one that didn't take, because it didn't happen, because all those who entered into Eretz Yisrael who were over 20 took their portion. And the minor orphans that were under the age of 20, they all obviously, we have to say, took through this concept of Chazara, like the daughters of Tzlavchad, although they didn't have their own portion going in, but they took from their father's portion because it was kicked back from their uncles to their grandfather, who then their father would have taken, and that's how they took too. Now, moreover, says Rashbam, those who, when they came into Eretz Yisrael, young kids, and they had a father and a mother who were still alive, so they couldn't take through Chazara, because they can't take from their father's father or their mother's father because their own parents are still alive and their own parents would be taking that portion of Eretz Yisrael because they're from those who come into Eretz Yisrael. So that's as if the child's taking because he's part of the family of his parents and therefore he has nothing to complain about. It would only be if it would be a minor orphan. And therefore there was, says Abaye, no case of any individual besides Bnei Slavchad who ended up getting and the tribe of Yisrael who complained that there was no one else that didn't get. Now, says Abaye, and if you would say to reject my proof and say that, no, I'm not sure, maybe there were many people that came to Eretz Yisrael and didn't have a portion of Eretz Yisrael, as we explained, according to either opinion, because the tzavach v'ahani, it's only those who screamed and were successful, like the daughters of Tzlavchad, that kasvei kra, only that the Torah records, but the tzavach v'loyahani le kasvei kra, but those who complained about it and were not successful, there the Torah doesn't record it, but maybe there were many people that didn't have a portion. And that says, Abai, you can't say that. Because the other episode that we mentioned, those are the tribe of Yosef, who they complained and they were not successful because they were not allowed to steal the portions of other tribes and Yeshua to give it from them. Because Rashbam says, although the Pasuk says and records that Yeshua responded to him, and when they complained about, we're so many people, we have no room, you got to give us something more. He said, okay, aleich lecha yara, go to the forest, etc. That's actually, as the Gemara will shortly explain, used for a drasha, but not like the simple translation, like as if Yeshua gave them more territory, that a forest to broaden their estate. Because if that would be from a different tribe, that Yeshua has no right to it, from a different tribe. And if it was from the tribe of the children of Yosef, then, of course, that's their permission to do whatever they want with their forest, to cut down the forest and to live over there. And therefore, Yeshua really wasn't giving them anything. So we see that even so, Ukasvi Nekra, and still the Torah records it. So obviously, it wasn't only those that were successful, even those that were not. And obviously, these were the only two episodes that people complained about not getting, because there was no other person that did not get a portion there to Israel. And that says the Gemara actually rejects the proof of Abaye and says that no, maybe there were others who complained about and they weren't mentioned because they weren't successful. So why do they then mention the episode of the Bnei Yosef if they were not successful also and it is recorded? And that says the Gemara, no, because Hasam over there by the tribe of Yosef, why is it written? That's for a different reason. It's because the Torah wants to teach us an important lesson from what Yeshua responded to the complaint of the tribe of Yosef. That it's coming to teach us the boilele inish, that a person has to conceal himself, lest duri me'ene bisha, to be careful from the evil eye, which that's why the Torah mentions this episode of the screaming of the tribe of Yosef, but really, maybe there were many others that also complained, but it wasn't written because they were not successful. Here it's recorded for a different reason. Because behind the Kamalahu Yeshua, this is what Yeshua had told to the Bnei Yosef. The Pasuk, it says in Pasuk after that, it says, V'yema aleim Yeshua. Yeshua said to them, he says, look, I can't add on to your territory, but I could give you good advice. Because you're im am ravata, if it's really true, like you're saying, that you have multitudes of people, you have so many children, b'li'ayin hara, that's where it comes from, without the evil eye. Alei l'cha hayara, go to the forest. What does that mean? Amlu, what he was telling them was, Lechu v'ichbiu atzmuchem biarm. Go and hide yourselves in the forest, shlei tishlit b'chem ayin ra, that the evil eye should not rule over you, where people could look begrudgingly, which could cause spiritual damage and harm. Therefore, go ahead and conceal. That's why the Torah records it, not because of the complaint, because maybe there were many more like that, rather regarding the response that a person should be careful and say, you got blessing, you don't have that much, be happy with what you have, conceal yourself in the ayin hara. Now, that the Gemara continues to base and records that Amr Leh, regarding that, the Bnei Yisrael responded to Yeshua and said, no, we don't have to go hide ourselves in the forest. Anan Mizari de Yosef, we are from the children of Yosef, to Leshalta Be'ein Abisha, that the evil eye does not rule over him. As Rashbam says, that's what the Pasuk records, that they responded, V'yemi Bnei Yosef, Lo Yimatzi Lo Nahar. We don't find our way to the mountain. In other words, we're not concerned to go to the forest, which they were calling a mountain, because we don't need to. Like the Pasuk says in Bereishis, Ben Paris Yosef, a charming son is Yosef, Ben Paris Aliyah, and the charming son, is he pleasing to the eye? Now, V'amar Babo, he expounded the Pasuk, Atikri Aliyah, don't say to the eye, Ela Oileyah, rather rising over the eye. In other words, the tribe of Yosef, they rise over the eye and they rule over it, and the eye, which is the evil eye, if someone looks begrudgingly, Ayin Ra, does not rule over them. So therefore they said, we don't have to go ahead and hide ourselves in the forest. Rabbi Yisrael B'chanina Amhachi brings a different source for this concept, an earlier pasuk there in Bereishis, that says, V'yidgu l'roiv b'ker v'arts, where the children of Yosef were blessed, that they should be fruitful to the multitudes, like fish, amongst the assemblies of the people on earth. Which teaches us, Ma'dogim shebayam, just like the fish in the sea, Mayim achasim aleim, meaning it was talking about how fish are fruitful, but an additional concept we see is just like the fish in the sea, that the water covers over them, and therefore the eye does not rule over them. You don't see all the fish there. Avzar shel Yosef, so too the children of Yosef, ein ha'ayin shaletz b'hem, the eye of others do not rule over them, and therefore we say we're not concerned with them. We don't have to hide ourselves because of our multitude of blessing in our children. Now the Gemara goes back to continue explaining the previous braisa, that of the previous daf that said Meraglim regarding the spies, Yeshuva Kolav Natl Chalkam. There were 12 of them, 10 of them had brought back bad reports. There were 2 that did not, which were Yeshua and Kalev. Yeshua and Kalev took the portion of the other spies that their children did not inherit them, rather Yeshua and Kalev did. And that is the Gemara, and immediately where do we know this concept from the Torah? Amauli says the Amakra, because the Pasuk says the Bamidbar, V'Yeshua ben Nun, V'Kalev ben Yefuna, these 2 of the 12 spies, Chayu min ha'anosh mehim, they survived from all the other ones. The other ones had a horrible death. They survived. Now that the question is, my Chayu, what does it mean that they lived? Ilem ha'chayu mamash, if it means literally that they lived, but V'Ksiv k'racharina, there's another Pasuk of Bamidbar that clearly says, V'loy noisim em ish, that none of the men survived, kiim kolav ben yifun v'yishu ben nun, except for kolav ben yifun v'yishu ben nun. So why do I need 2 psukim to say the same idea, that they survived? Elamai chayu, rather, what does the pasuk mean, that they lived, shechayu b'chelkam, that they lived in their portion of the rest, because they took the inheritance of the other 10 spies in Eretz Yisrael. Now the Braisa continued and said, misloin b'adas kairach, regarding those who complained, and the assembly of kairach, lohoyil and chelik bars, they didn't get any portion of Eretz Yisrael, meaning to say that was sublimated and just as if they didn't exist, and it was divided amongst the rest of the Jewish people. Now that is the Gemara contradiction. But Batanya learned another brace that says, Miraglim mislainim badas kairach, that not only by the spies, but also by the complainers and by the assembly of Kairach who fought against Moshe Rabbeinu, Yeshua v'kolav natlu chalkim, it says that Yeshua and Kalev took it. Not that it was sublimated into the portions of the rest of the Bnei Yisrael. So the Gemara, like Kash, it's not a difficulty. Because yes, they're disagreeing, but it's understood why they disagree. Mar makish misloinim lemeraglim. The Tana of this last brisa compares the complainers to the spies. Mar loy makish misloinim lemeraglim. The first brisa that we quoted does not compare and equate, does not make a hekish of those who complain to the spies. The Tana like learned a brisa which expounds this pasuk in Mamid beperek of Zayin pasuk Gimel that talks about by the Bnei of Tzlafchad when they were complaining about that they're not getting their father's portion. The Pasuk reads, Avinu meis b'midbar. A father died in the desert. V'hu l'hoyeh b'teicha eidan. He was not part of the assembly hane'odim al Hashem that gathered onto Hashem b'adas kairach in the assembly of kairach. Ki v'chetoy meis, he died because of his own individual sin. Uvanim l'hoyeh, and he didn't have any sons. Why should he lose? That was the whole thing about the complaint of the Bnei of Tzlafchad. Now, the Braisa expounds each part of this Pasuk, defining it to its particulars. When they said Avinu meis b'midbar, our father died in the desert, says the Braisa, that's Tzlafchad, that's a reference to their father, it's Tzlafchad. which Rashbam says that's pretty obvious because the pasuk before is talking about, it says it was B'nai Slavcha, the dogs of Slavcha. Obviously, our father means Slavcha himself. Rather, it's just because it's coming to explain the pasuk, it expounds it. But actually, Rashbam says that it would seem that there's actually words missing from this exposition, because the beginning of the Brisa in the Sefri, the way it's brought, is expounded when it says Avinu Meis Bamidbar. It's not coming to refer to this pasuk itself. Of course, it means Slavcha. Rather, Rabbi Kiva says, here it says Bamidbar in the desert. There's another pasuk elsewhere that says the word Midbar also, which comes to tell us, just like over here, obviously, was Tomat Slavchad, so to over there, when it says Midbar, is also referring to Slavchad, which from there we learn out that the Mekoshesh Eitzim, the one that sinned on Shabbos, by doing a certain malacha with the wood, was also referring to Slavchad. So it's not reflecting on this pasuk itself. Of course we know Slavchad, it's coming to reflect on that pasuk over there to say what was that sin he had done. He was the Mekoshesh Eitzim. Either way, continues the Braisa, and it was not amongst the assembly. So although if one would read the pasuk, it sounds like it's one thing about the Adas Kairach, here the Braisa divides it and says, no, he was not of any one of these particular episodes. He was not part of the assembly. That refers to Zeh Adas Meragel. That refers to the assembly of the spies, because we find the pasuk in the Midbar Yadal says, the complaint is Ad Masai Le'eda Harah Azais. When will it be for this evil, wicked assembly, Ashahema Malin Malai, that they gang up against me, says Hashem, meaning they gang up others against me. So who was that that had done that? Which assembly is that? That was the minion, that was the 10 people of the Meraglim. So on that day said, our father was not from the Meraglim. Neither was he Ahanai Adam Al Hashem, from those who gathered up against Hashem, Elam Islainim. That refers to the complainers, whereas the Gemara will later on explain, it means not like as we find other times in history that there were by the Midbar that there were complainers. It means specifically the complainers of the assembly of Kairach, which the pasuk says regarding them, L'chein ata v'chol adascha, therefore you and all of your assembly, hanei odem al Hashem, which are gathering up against Hashem, which refers to those 250 Rashi Sanhedrin that Kairach had gathered to fight against Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what refers to hanei odem al Hashem, as it says over there. Here also, when they're talking about he was not from those who gathered up against Hashem, it means he was not from those 250 from Adas Kairach. And when the pasuk says Badas Kairach, and she says that he was not from the assembly of Kairach, that's Kamashmai, that's literally, he was not from the actual camp of Kairach fighting against Moshe, rather he had his own individual sin, why should he not go ahead and lose his portion? Now, on that explains the Gemara. Mar, the Tana of the second Braisa, Makish Mislainim L'Meraglim. He equates, he makes a Hekish, in this pasuk that puts together that when they're talking about our father was not one of these three camps, that one of the camps it talks about is the complainers, is equating it to the other camp of the Meraglim. So since it's written in one pasuk, so just like Yeshua and Kalev inherited the spies, so too this Braisa holds that they inherited the Mislainim too. Whereas Amar, Le'makish Mislainim L'Meraglim, the first Braisa that we quoted in the previous staff, does not equate the complainers to the spies, because he does not consider it as a hekish, because it doesn't say with a vav. If it was a hekish comparing all the three camps, it should have said he was not b'teicha eda v'hanoi adam, and those. Since it doesn't have a vav, so it's not considered one, therefore there's no equation, and therefore you could say that, yes, Yeshua and Kalev inherited the Meraglim, but not the Mislainim. And rather, that was split amongst the rest of the Jewish people. Gemara continues with the fourth question Rav Papa had for Abaye. V'amalei Rav Papa l'Abaye. Says Ulaman the Makish Mislainim L'Meraglim. Now going back on what we just said. So according to the Tanya, the Braisa holds that there is an equation between the complainers and the spies. So Ichbel Yeshua v'Kalev v'Yartu l'Kula Eretz Yisrael comes out that Yeshua and Kalev doubled their inheritance, and they basically inherited the entirety of Eretz Yisrael. Now it doesn't mean the entire Eretz Yisrael. Rather, it would mean almost that they inherited the majority of Eretz Yisrael. Because the pasuk, we find other places in the desert that the Jewish people were vayaloinu ha'am al Moshe leima, that the people complained. It says vayaloinu on Moshe saying, manishta, what are we going to drink? The Jews complained a lot. So if you say that you don't make a hekesh between the Misloinim and the Meraglim, so what you could say is, according to that opinion, that every single tribe, yes, the Misloinim, let's say, did not take. So the rest of that tribe took what their other tribe mates were Misloinim. But according to this opinion that holds that we equate the Meraglim to the Mislainim, so which we said that means Yeshua and Kalev took not only from the Meraglim but also from the complainers, comes out that every single tribe lost out chunks and chunks of their inheritance because Yeshua and Kalev were taken from all these complainers where there are many Jews who complained. Now the problem is that we know, and from many psukim you could learn out, that Yeshua and Kalev didn't take even 1,000 from the Jewish people. But according to that interpretation, they took from all the complainers. That Amalei, that what Rav Abayi responded to Rav Papa, which we already alluded to this interpretation earlier, doesn't mean that they were the Mislainim, the regular complainers. It's Mislainim Shabadas Kairach Kamrin. We're talking about the complainers of the assembly of Kairach, which is besides the camp of Kairach and his family, there were the 250 people that he gathered with him. Those 250, what we're referring to, that's where there's a Machlekes of Yeshua and Kalev took it or not. But they didn't take from the whole majority of the Jewish people who complained. That they didn't take from. Now the Gemara continues with the fifth question. Vamalei Rav Papa L'Abaye says, continuing on this theme, on this topic, very well can be understood according to the opinion who holds that Egypt, that Eretz was divided amongst those who left Egypt. So that's how we could understand the following pasuk in Sefer Yeshua, which after it mentions that the daughters of Tzlavcha took a portion in Eretz Yisrael, it says so that the portions that fell for the tribe of Menashe were 10. What's 10? So we could understand. There was Shita de Shita Bati Abis. There were the six portions of the six main families that there were in the tribe of Menashe, which are written there earlier in the Pasuk. And you have the four portions that fell to the daughters of Tzlafchad, who were from the tribe of Menashe. So, Ha'asara. So you have a sum total of 10 portions. Because earlier the Pasuk mentions that there was for the tribe of Menashe that were left over, that certain families were Bnei Abiyazar, Bnei Chalak, Bnei Asriel, Bnei Shechem, Bnei Hefer, Bnei Shemida, which was six families. It says, Eilu Bnei Menashe Ben Yosef, this is the families of Menashe, the tribe of Menashe, the son of Yosef, which are the males according to their families. And yet, Tzlafchad Ben Hefer, and it says Yeshua gave them an apportion based on what Hashem had said amongst their brothers of their fathers. And that's when it says, V'yipu Chav Menashe Asara, which is between the six families and the four, the door of Tzlafchad, which again, we said that the reason why the doors of Tzlafchad got four was because the portion of Tzlafchad himself, who again was saying according to the opinion that holds that it was a portion according to those who left Egypt. You have the two portions that he got from his father Hefer, which was one the regular portion and one because it was a Bechar. And then you have the one, as the Gemara will say, later on explain, that when the orders of Tzlafchad had an uncle who left Egypt, who had his own portion, which he died in the Midbar, and what was fit to get from that portion, that which Tzlafchad should have gotten because he was a brother, that his daughters took, which later on the Gemara is going to explain what is the pasuk you're calculating when it's mentioning the daughters of Tzlafchad with all the families. But we could understand where you would get 10 portions for the tribe of Menashe. Ella, but Asra Papa, Lamandam, Labaya Arts, according to the one who says that Eretz was divided amongst those who came to Eretz Yisrael. So to Man Yehuda Hava, it would come out that the tribe of Menashe only should have 8 portions. Because Shita the Shita Badi Abbas, you have the 6 of the 6 families in the tribe of Menashe, betrayed it who? And the only 2 portions that the daughters of Tzlafchad got, which are the 2 portions from the estate of their grandfather Hefer, which they get through the process known as Chazara. Because as we said, the sons of Hefer, when they enter into Eretz Yisrael, each one takes their own portion. And it's them who come, whether it's them or the grandsons of Hefer, which as we said, La'ila Techalika Aretz is those who enter that it gets divided amongst two. But then we said that gets kicked back, which is called Chazara, back to the ones who bequeath to them, which are those who left Egypt, which is Hefer, who he left Egypt. Which, as we said, that the children who are taking it now are only like the agents, as we said, like because it really goes back. So it's as if that Hefer was the one who had married it and has possession in all these different portions. But then, when Hefer dies, so then all his children inherit, meaning even Tzlafchad, who never made it to Eretz Yisrael, but he is a son of Hefer. So the daughters of Tzlafchad took those 2 portions because Tzlafchad was a Bechar. So each one of the brothers, each one take their own portion. So it comes out that the daughters of Tzlafchad take the 2 portions that were coming to their father in the estate of his father, which is Hefer. So too, when the 2 brothers of Tzlafchad die, as the Gemara later on is going to explain to answer this question, so the brothers of Tzlafchad who were still alive, they inherit. And so too, the daughters of Tzlafchad who take the role of their father inherited those 2 dead brothers. And they married in the portion that he should have taken in the estate of Hefer, which again, as we said, kicks back to those who, when they go to Israel, goes back to the one who was left Egypt, as we explained. But what we are saying, according to the opinion holds that it was divided amongst those who came to Israel, but the portion of Tzlafchad, that they didn't take. Because as we're saying, according to this opinion, Eretz Yisrael was not divided amongst those who left Egypt. And therefore, moreover, it doesn't apply the concept of Chazara, going back to Tzlafchad who left Egypt himself, because as the Torah records, Tzlafchad didn't have any sons who should get a portion to then kick it back to their father to then go to the daughters of Tzlafchad. So therefore, asks the Gemara, Hotemanya, so it comes out the six families plus the two of the daughters of Tzlafchot is only eight, not ten. So how do you understand it according to that opinion? That responds, Abaya, wait a second. Utamech, according to your reasoning, even according to the one who says the Eretz Yisrael was divided amongst those who left Egypt, still, you're not going to have ten either. Tes Hava, it's only going to be nine, because you have the nine of the, you have the six of the six families, and you have the three that the daughters of Tzlafchot got, as recorded in our Mishnah and the previous Dafim, which said that they took three, one from their father, and two from their grandfather, which their father should have gotten. So rather, what are you going to have to say? Like we mentioned before, that it must have been that their father had one brother who passed away after their grandfather had passed away, which then the brothers inherit, which then they take the place of their father inheriting their brother. Says the Gemara, so same thing you'll have to say for the other man, the whole that the boy Eretz Yisrael Nischalka is the true Achad Abba Havalahu. You're right, that they didn't get anything from their father. There must have been that there was two brothers that died after their father Hefer, which they had merited before they died in their father Hefer's property, which had gone back from the ones who had inherited in Eretz Yisrael, as we explained, goes backwards, although that these brothers were not alive when they came to Eretz Yisrael, and it gets divided when they get to Eretz Yisrael, but it goes backwards up to Hefer, and since Hefer died before them, so they inherited, and again, it's that then the children inherit. So, for example, if let's say Hefer had eight sons, and two of them died in the Midbar, and so Tzlafchot died with them too, and you have only five sons that made it to Eretz Yisrael, so they take five portions, as we said, but then it goes back to their father Hefer, and Hefer had died, then his eight sons inherited. So it comes out that Tzlafchot took two portions because he's the firstborn. Then additionally, the seven brothers take the other seven portions. Then when Tzlafchot dies, so his daughters then take his two portions, which he inherited from his father Hefer. Then when the other two brothers die without any children, then the five brothers with the daughters of Tzlafchot who take the place of their father Tzlafchot come and inherit those two brothers. So it comes out that the daughters of Tzlafchot took four portions. You have the two large portions, which they take from their grandfather Hefer, taking the place of their father, which is the regular portion, like all the brothers, and the double portion. And then you have the two smaller portions, which is that they take the parts of their two uncles who had passed away, which are smaller pieces because it's those brothers who died own portion in their father, which then when they die, all the brothers divide their portions, which they are smaller. Now, however, although that answers the Gemara's question, obviously, says Rashbam, the one who had asked the question, did not hold that there were two uncles that passed away, only one, as we find in the Braisa. But says the Gemara, the Tanya, like we learned in the Braisa, that there's this concept that there's uncles that had passed away, whether one or two, and therefore says Abaye to wrap up, but that will answer the question either way. We don't find according to either opinion 10. So either you're going to have to say that one uncle died or two uncles died. The Tanya like we learned in the Braisa, which explains this concept, the Pasuk in Bamidbar, Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, says that Kain Benoit Tzlafchot Divers, that this was how the daughters of Tzlafchot had said, which is that's what you should do as they had asked, which Hashem says, Nosin titlehem achuzes nachlo b'toich ache avim, that you give them a portion in the inheritance of the Yerusha of their father's brothers, and vavarta es nachlas avim len, then you give over the portion of their father to them. So explains the Braisa, each one of these words come to explain a certain concept. When it says, Nosin titlehem, give you shall surely give them, that's superfluous, because the Pasuk could have just said, Yinchlu b'nai Tzlafchot, that the daughters of Tzlafchot will inherit, and nothing more, says the Braisa. So rather, what are these words coming to refer to? Sunachlas avihen. This is the inheritance of their father, who, because he was from those who left Egypt, which as Rashbam points out, the Tanakam of this Braisa holds, that the land of Eretz Yisrael was split amongst those who had left Egypt. So their father, Tzlafchot, who left, gets a portion. And the Pasuk then continues, and Hashem says, B'teich achi avin, that they get amongst their father's brothers. What is that referring to? Zunachlas avi avin. That's referring to their father's father, their grandfather, Hefer, who their father, Tzlafchot, took one portion like all the other portions, that although he's not alive, but they get now their father's portions where they split with their uncles. Then when the Pasuk continues, Vavartes nachlas avin lehen, that you pass over their father's portion to their father's inheritance to them, zu chelik b'chayra. That's referring to the third thing that they get, which is the father's portion of the firstborn. And where do we see that from the word Vavarta? As Rashbam says, as the Pasuk in Shemos Yud Gimel says regarding the mitzvah of the firstborn, Vavarta kol petarechem, we see regarding the firstborn child, it says the term Vavarta, which that refers to the portion of the Bechira. So we find that the daughters, that Slavchad himself took by his father Chefer one portion more than his brother, besides the regular portion, because he was a Bechir. Now, however, points out Rashbam, you have to say that this Tana also holds of, like Rebbe Eliezer, that we're going to shortly quote, that there was one brother to their father who had passed away, because we know that from the superfluous terminology of Achuzas Nachla, as we're going to say later on. Because if this Tana does not hold that there was an uncle that had passed away, then you're not going to be able to resolve the pasuk. It says Chavli Menashe Asar, that there were 10 portions. But, however, as we'll see from this Tana Kama's dispute with Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakov, from the words Nas and Titan, he does not want to expound from that redundant term Nas and Titan like Rebbe Eliezer, to say, oh, from the extra word comes to say there was another portion which would make it 4, which is the uncle, because the Tana Kama holds that Dibur Terek Halosh from the other, and the Terek talks like people talk, and this is a machlek as we find many times in Shas, Hanik Tanik Loi, which is that the Terek talks in that redundant type of a way, and therefore that wouldn't come to include anything else. But, says Rashbam, this Tana Kama is only mentioning 3. There has to be a 4th one because you have to have 6 families plus the 4 of them in Islavchad making 10. It must mean that, as we'll see shortly, that the one who holds that there were 2 uncles, this Tana Kama holds there's only 1, but the one where that opinion holds that you know 2 as Abai was answering to Papa, that extra one of Achuzas Nachal would teach for this Tana Kama to be that extra one of the uncle. Now, Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakov Omer, he says, Af chelki achi avim natlu. He says that even There was a 4th portion that B'nai Slavcha took, which was the portion of their father's brother who had passed away. Shenema Nosen Titan, where it says, not only does it say Nosen Titan, which is extra, but even just saying Nosen Lehem. Why say Nosen Titan? That double terminology comes to say another portion, which makes for a sum total of 4. Which again, Rashbam says that the Tanakam agrees to, he just doesn't know you learn it from Nosen Titan. Now, however, says Abayitra Papu, Lamanda Matri Achide Abahavalahu. Now, according to the one that says that they were actually 2 uncles who had passed away in the Midbar. Hahu machuzas nachal nafka. That's learned out from the extra terminology of that they inherit a portion of the inheritance of the nachla, which it could have just said in the pasuk, nosen titlam nachla b'teich achyavin. Why does it say achuzas nachla? Comes to add on another brother. Besides that, what we learn out from nosen titain, you also learn out achuzas nachla, which again, according to the Tanna Kamma and Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakov, there's only 1 uncle, but Rebbe Elezer ben Yaakov knows it from Nosen Titin, and the Tanna Kamma knows it from Achuzas Nachla. So that resolves that question of Rabbi Papa. Now the Gemara goes on to the last question of Rabbi Papa, the 6th one, V'amalei Rabbi Papa Labaya, again on this theme, Kra, this pasuk that we quoted before of that Chevli Menashe Asara, that the inheritance of the tribe of Menashe were 10 portions, my kochashim, what are we actually calculating? In other words, are we going based on the families or on the individuals? And that is, each form kachashiv, if we're even counting the kids, the children, well then tuva haba. There were actually much more than just 10. If you're going to count every single brother that there was in the tribe of Menashe, who took a portion in their family, so then, because as we find, and that's part of the question, we find that the daughters of Tzlafchad, who are the individuals, we count their portions, not just the larger families, so then it's actually, we should be more than 10. And Ibati Abis Kachashav, therefore only counting the larger families, so Shita Hava. So then there's only 6. Because the daughters of Tzlafchad are part of the larger family of the Mishpachas HaChafri, which they're all like the other siblings of the children of Chefer. So since we already counted one of the 6 families is the family of Chefer, so why does it count individually the 4 portions that the daughters of Tzlafchad got? Why, what's this number 10? Either should be 6 or should be much more than 10. So that the Gemara answers, Abaya answers on top of Kofi Tessam and Aleph, he says, truthfully, you're right, we're only counting the larger families, the larger extended families in the Mishpacha of the tribe of Menashe, and not the children, except for B'nai Slavchad, where there we did count their 4 portions, making it for a total of 10. Why? Because of Hakam Ashmalon, this is what the Pasuk is coming to teach us, that we expound, as we mentioned just before, Nas and Titin, which from that we learn out that they actually got 4 portions. And what does that tell us? Because we only know that by the fact that we darshan Vavarto, which also tells us that one of the 4 portions is that they got not only the father's portion, but they got also his double portion. That teaches us this important halacha that the pasuk wants to allude to. And that's why it mentions their four portions. Four? Where did they get four? Yeah, one of them was the Bechaira. How? Because the Bnei Slavcha, not L'chelik Bechaira, the daughters of Slavcha, took their father's double portion. Alma Eretz Yisrael, Mukhzakasi. What that teaches is that obviously Eretz Yisrael was already has taken possession of by those who had left Egypt, even though never even entered into Eretz Yisrael. Because that's a law by Bechaira, that the firstborn only gets in Yerusha what's called B'mukhzik, not B'ro, what would be fit to come. Now, you might say, yes, those who left Egypt, Eretz Yisrael was split to them, but they didn't get it yet. It was fit for them to get it. They only got it like retroactively when they got to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, even if you'll say that their children, like Slavcha, should get the portion, but should not get the portion of Bechaira, that's why we have to tell you the four of them in Slavcha to say, where'd they get four? Well, we know they got their fathers. We know that they got that from the grandfather. We know that they got the uncle. But where's that fourth one? Must be Bechaira. Bechaira? But how do you have Bechaira? It's only Ro. That's where we see that no, not only did they get in paper their shear, they actually was like they already had their shear, and that's why the son Slavchad got, which was given over to his daughters, the portion also of Bechaira. That's why we have to mention that to allude and to teach this halacha.